Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, December 8th, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Bomb threat evacuates Moscow High School. Former Idaho State Senator Corder to be Ibarra aide. Moscow Homeland Security contract manager to stand trial for embezzlement. Idaho Power is seeding clouds in southern Idaho. And we'll have an interview with Pratap Chatterjee, the executive director of CorpWatch, who appears in the movie Shadows of Liberty, which Radio Free Moscow and the UUCP are presenting at the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Palouse tomorrow night. All that and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report, but first world headlines from Feature Story News and the Pacifica Radio Network. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Moscow Police Chief David Duke said early this afternoon the bomb threat that caused the evacuation of Moscow High School this morning was found to be false. Duke said police searched the school and found no evidence of a bomb. He said police are looking for evidence leading to the person who communicated the threat and has urged anyone who may be aware of clues, even if it's a posting on social media, to contact the police. I spoke to Moscow School Superintendent Greg Bailey after becoming aware of the bomb threat shortly before 10 a.m. this morning.
Well, at the Moscow High School, we received a threat, a bomb threat today that was specific to that school. And so for precautionary measures, we have evacuated the students and staff. Students that have the capabilities of driving were allowed to. Students that don't will be bused over to the middle school for the purpose of parents could pick them up there. The other schools will remain open because the threat was specific to the high school. And the police are currently searching the building, and we're doing this for just precautionary measures.
Okay, so you're pretty much done with school for the day at the high school then?
Correct.
Okay, and what time did this threat come in?
I prefer not to give any further information until we're done with the investigation.
Okay, any other information that you need to let the community know about?
I believe not. We will inform them later when more information is available. We will be looking to make up this day.
That was Moscow School District Superintendent Greg Bailey speaking shortly before 10 a.m. this morning. Once police gave the all clear around 12:30 p.m., students were allowed to return to pick up belongings left behind. Although high school classes were canceled for the rest of the day today, all afternoon and evening after school activities were scheduled to go on as normal. Former Republican State Senator Tim Corder of Mountain Home has told reporters he will be a special assistant to Idaho Superintendent of Public Instruction Sherry Ibarra once she takes office next month. Corder accompanied Ibarra to legislative organizational meetings in Boise last week as she met with lawmakers. The Republican Ibarra was elected despite having little experience in politics and making several missteps in her campaign against Democrat Jana Jones. Ibarra is a third-grade teacher. Corder lost his Senate seat to Republican Burt Brackett in 2012, when redistricting forced the two senators to run against each other in the Republican primary. Corder was targeted for defeat by the Idaho Association of Commerce and Industry in 2008 after he worked in the legislature to start reviews of the state's $1.75 billion in annual sales tax exemptions. Corder was lead sponsor of an unsuccessful 2008 bill to expand the Idaho Human Rights Act to protect people from discrimination based on sexual orientation, and he co-sponsored successful daycare licensing legislation in 2009. Idaho Power Company is ramping up for another season of cloud seeding in southern Idaho, something the company has done for several years. Idaho Power runs 20 remotely operated silver iodide spreading towers on eastern Idaho ridges between Island Park and Soda Springs. Weather managers watch for the right kind of storms and then activate the towers in an effort to get the storms to drop more precipitation. The utility works in cooperation with the High Country Resource Conservation and Development Council, which owns 25 manually operated silver iodide towers in eastern Idaho. Workers ignite a torch that burns silver iodide particles, which drift up into the clouds, giving water molecules something to cling on to, resulting in more snow 5 to 15 miles downwind. Scientists say the cloud seeding effort in the Upper Snake River Basin is responsible for producing 270,000 acre-feet of additional water each year. Other scientists say the effectiveness of cloud seeding is difficult to prove. Idaho Power also operates another cloud seeding program in the Payette Basin using 23 silver iodide generating towers and two airplanes which release silver iodide deep inside clouds. The company spends $1.6 million per year on its cloud seeding program. The lead researcher in a study on the Western Glacier Snowfly says the insect only found in Glacier National Park may disappear when the glaciers in the park disappear as predicted in 2030. Researcher Joe Giersch told the Associated Press those involved in the study found the stonefly in only one of six glacier-fed cold water streams where they had found them before. They also found the rare stonefly in two high-elevation springs inside the park. Giersch, who participated in the study conducted by the U.S. Geological Survey, Bucknell University, and the University of Montana, said the findings are some of the first evidence of the biological impacts of climate change in the Northern Rockies. There is a petition pending before the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to protect the glacier stonefly under the Endangered Species Act, and biologists think they might be able to extend the time the species exists by raising them in laboratories and then releasing them in the park streams. However, if global climate change causes the streams to dry up, they would be unable to survive in the wild anyway. Town leaders in Jackson, Wyoming have issued a formal complaint against plans by the National Park Service to increase the cost of a 7-day pass to visit both Yellowstone and Grand Teton Parks from $25 to $50. The Park Service also plans to discontinue its $50 season passes for both parks and replace them with $60 season passes for each park. Jackson Town Council member Jim Stanford told the Jackson Hole News and Guide, "Public lands are not supposed to be managed like a business." Jackson Hole Anglers owner Dave Ellerstein, who runs guided fishing trips into Yellowstone Park, said the new fees will be significant when his clients are just trying to go fishing for 4 hours. A federal judge has set a January 6th trial date in Coeur d'Alene for a contract administrator for a Moscow-based firm accused of double and triple charging the Department of Homeland Security for fuel. Matt E. Ruck of Government Services Corporation has pleaded not guilty to embezzling nearly $345,000 from the federal agency by entering billing amounts into credit card processing software operated by the company Elevon. The Lewiston Tribune reports a grand jury indictment says Ruck falsely claimed Elevon had made a mistake when Homeland Security confronted him about the duplicate bills. Ruck's trial is expected to last 3 days. Ruck faces up to 20 years in prison and $250,000 fine on wire fraud charges and 10 years in prison and another $250,000 fine for theft of government money. An attorney for Lacey Sonnen of Grangeville has filed a $1 million tort claim against the city of Lewiston for negligence and recklessness stemming from an injury to 18-month-old Peyton Holly due to a tasering incident. Sonnen is the mother of Holly. Attorney Noel Pittner says Lewiston police tasered the father, 33-year-old Levi Holly, as he walked from a home to his car November 8th while holding Peyton. The taser shock caused Levi Holly to fall on his daughter, who suffered a skull fracture and two cracked vertebrae. Holly was treated and released from the hospital. Pittner told the Lewiston Tribune, "We're claiming the actions went above and beyond their duty and procedures." Carrie Ravencroft told the paper the case has been sent to the city's insurance carrier, the Idaho County's Risk Assessment Management Program, who will do a major investigation to determine the validity of the claim. The claim says Levi Holly's father, Irvin Holly, called police saying Levi had threatened to shoot his wife and burn down his house and kill a police officer and his family. Police arrived and surrounded the home, and Levi Holly allegedly refused at first to leave the home, but then left carrying the child in his arms. King County prosecutors say Seattle police officer Adley Shepard acted, quote, professionally and with restraint when he broke a woman's eye socket while arresting her June 22nd, and will not face criminal charges. Television station KOMO says Shepard responded to a call that the woman was threatening a family member and found the woman drunk and said she resisted arrest. Washington State Police conducted the investigation and passed on the information to the county prosecutor's office for a determination on whether Shepard should be charged with assault. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. The Idaho State Police say they used a drone to photograph an armed fugitive who had barricaded himself in a Coeur d'Alene home November 29th. The standoff with a SWAT team ended when police found fugitive John David Crispin dead of what police called an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound to the chest. The Coeur d'Alene Press said police obtained a warrant allowing them to photograph the home. It is the second time the Idaho State Police have used a drone during an investigation. The agency used a drone at a shooting scene near Post Falls in August. A federal judge in Oregon sentenced an Oregon State Police detective to 18 months probation Friday for forgery and official misconduct for actions taken during the investigation of a 9-day, 3-state murder rampage by a white supremacist couple that left 4 dead. Detective David Steele agreed to resign from the Oregon State Police as part of the plea deal and pay a $300 fine. Joey Peterson and Holly Grigsby were convicted of killing Peterson's father and stepmother in Washington, a teenager in Oregon, and a black man in Northern California during a 9-day rampage. Peterson and Grigsby mistakenly believed the teenager was Jewish. U.S. District Judge Ansar Haggerty sentenced the couple to life in prison, but also charged Detective Steele with misconduct in the case because he withheld and destroyed evidence, illegally eavesdropped on Peterson's confidential prison phone calls with his attorneys, and intercepted confidential legal mail sent to Peterson in prison. Judge Haggerty said the couple could have gotten the death sentence, but instead got life sentences because of Steele's misconduct. Syringa Mobile Home Park owner Magar E. Magar of Vancouver, Washington, must continue to pay some of the daily contempt penalties stemming from his failure to get the water system at his Robinson Lake Road trailer park outside of Moscow up to Idaho state standards. The Daily News reports Magar did not appear at a court hearing Friday, and his attorney, Greg Rauch, told Stegner Magar was recovering from being sick, and it was his impression that his client did not have to appear as long as he was up to date on his contempt payments. Last month, Mager was found to be behind in the penalty payments, but state records show he paid $1,400 to the court last Wednesday and another $400 Friday. Stegner had earlier ordered Mager to pay $250 per day in contempt penalties in the lawsuit brought against him by the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality and $100 per day in the class action lawsuit filed by many of his 200 trailer court tenants. Referring to Rauch's contention that Mager did not have to appear in court, Judge Stegner said, "I don't think that's the impression I gave." Rauch told Judge Stegner, and Syringa Mobile Home Park manager Shannon Music confirmed that work involving pipe augering on the water system at the trailer park was not completed. Rauch said that meant Mager still must continue to pay the $100 per day penalty in the class action case. Rauch said a local company was going to do the job, but they canceled out when they discovered the pipes to be augered were of a different size than they thought, and they found they did not have the proper tools to do the job. Also Friday, Judge Stegner appointed Judge Carl Carrick to preside over a mediation session between Mager and the class action tenants, represented by the University of Idaho Legal Aid Clinic. KRFP and the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Palouse are presenting the film Shadows of Liberty tomorrow night, a film that explores how the mainstream media manipulates public opinion on behalf of media owners. The film begins at 7 p.m. at the UUCP, located at 420 East 2nd Street in Moscow. The film includes appearances by journalists and activists who work to expose truth and lies, such as Amy Goodman, Julian Assange, Danny Glover, and Chris Hedges. Also making an appearance in the film is CorpWatch Executive Director Pratap Chatterjee. The CorpWatch website is filled with investigative journalism on how corporate policies and corruption impact indigenous and working communities around the world, as well as the environment. Recent stories include Firestone Tire's role in funding Liberian warlord revealed, how the State Bank of India has offered the corporation Adani Enterprises a $1 billion loan for a mega coal mining operation in Australia that environmentalists say may severely impact the barrier reef, and several stories about poorer nations, including India, being sued under free trade laws over their business policies that protect consumers, labor, and the environment. I spoke to Pratap Chatterjee at the CorpWatch headquarters in San Francisco this afternoon by phone. What part of the movie do you think would be the most eye-opening to people who have been depending on the mainstream media and maybe seeing this point of view for the first time?
Well, I think that what Shadows of Liberty does is it traces a media cover-up, stories that were covered by alternative media and then were ignored or essentially dropped by the mainstream media. And in particular, of course, this is true of the war on terror, quote-unquote, where the United where the mainstream media has failed to cover the big issues of the day and the problems of corporate power. I mean, corporate power in the media itself, corporate contracts in the war itself in Iraq and Afghanistan. So those are some of the issues that Shadows of Liberty cover. I mean, they go back. They Jean-Philippe interviews Julian Assange well before he became famous in the mainstream media about some of this coverage of the war. He talks to me, he talks to other people, you know, like Daniel Ellsberg and a number of other activists who have been covering this issue, as well as alternative media producers, people like Amy Goodman, and tries to show how the alternative media has covered these same topics.
And some would argue that the war on terror is basically based on lies.
Oh, it's certainly based on a lot of misinformation. There is also based on a lot of, shall we say, a drumbeat, you know, against an enemy that's largely, which is not quite as it's an enemy that's not that easily fought, right? So if you want to fight Al Qaeda, can you fight it using armies in Iraq, where Al Qaeda doesn't exist or didn't exist at least back in 2001, 2003? Well, the mainstream media goes along with the government's line that this war needs to be fought, essentially in the Muslim countries, the Middle East and Central Asia, without questioning the fact that, the war is not based on the government of, let's say, Saddam Hussein or some such thing, but in fact is a completely, Saddam Hussein, for example, had nothing to do with 9/11, yet Iraq was invaded under that pretext. So that most certainly was either misinformation or almost certainly a lot of bad information and perhaps even lies.
And finally, a lot of the reporting in Corp Watch seems to be focused on the giant extractive industries and their contentious relations with indigenous cultures around the world. And that's, you know, mainly in the mining and energy sector, but I'm sure, you know, also in timber and so forth. And there's this tendency to demonize the resistors and paint them as terrorists. That seems to be going on with different words for a couple centuries now. I was wondering if maybe you could just comment on that aspect a little more.
Well, Corp Watch tries to really represent the point of view of communities that are adversely impacted by corporate power. And that could be environmental impacts, it could be human rights impacts. For that matter, it could be the abuse of taxpayer money, you know, corruption, political corruption, or for that matter, tax fraud and what have you. So one of the people that are most severely impacted by corporate power, in fact, are the communities who have lived on lands for centuries and depend on those lands. And those are typically indigenous communities, but often rural communities, you know, for that matter, here in the United States or anywhere else in the world. So these are people who are typically poor and eke out a living. And the companies typically kick them off the land or buy it from them for a pittance. And what we try to do at Corp Watch is represent why they object to it. And when you see that in the context of the impact of climate change and the possibility of alternative energy, you realize that much of this is not really necessary. It is simply an activity for the blind pursuit of profit, and we as global citizens need to be aware that there are huge impacts of this kind of extraction. When you frack in Pennsylvania, in Ohio and states like that, you really increase the possibility of earthquakes. You contaminate the water supply, so you get a few days worth of energy for the country, and you devastate a community for life, if not for many generations down the road. And this, in particular, has a big impact on communities that may have lived in these areas for centuries or millennia, particularly indigenous communities whose lives are tied to the land.
That was Corp Watch Executive Director Pratap Chatterjee speaking this afternoon with KRFP. Chatterjee appears in the film Shadows of Liberty, which KRFP will be showing as a fundraiser tomorrow night at the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Palouse, presented by the UUCP and the movie's producers. Shadows of Liberty will be shown at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Palouse, located at 420 East 2nd Street in Moscow. Admission is free and donations will be accepted for KRFP and the film's producers. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly cloudy tonight, low 36, 30% chance of rain after 4 a.m. 80% chance of rain tomorrow and tomorrow night, mainly after 10 a.m. and mainly before 10 p.m., high 47, low 40. And a 30% chance of rain Wednesday, slight chance before 10 a.m. and then another chance after 4 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy. High 52, 80% chance of rain mainly after 10 p.m. Wednesday night, low 43, and another 80% chance of rain Thursday, high 49. Currently, we have fair skies, 44 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to attend the screening of Shadows of Liberty tomorrow night at 420 East 2nd Street in Moscow at the UUCP, and donate to Radio Free Moscow. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow, including becoming a member. Coming up next, we have news from the and opinions from the West Side with Eat the Airwaves, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. At a little after 7:30, we'll have Climate Justice Forum going on the air tonight. Thanks for tuning in to the